This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. From the Supreme Court to the halls of Congress to Jerusalem, it's been an important week for America, and today you're going to hear about all of them over the next half hour. A little later on, we'll hear from Eric Stakelbeck about the president's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Also, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise joins Tony to talk about the spending bill and the tax reform bill. But first, on Tuesday of this week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on the highly anticipated Masterpiece Cake Shop case. Joining Tony to talk about the case was John Scruggs, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom.
John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you were in the courtroom for the oral arguments. Interesting reading the transcripts of the arguments. Some unexpected grilling. On both sides from some of the justices.
And no doubt. There were some difficult questions coming from all sides. It almost had an electric feeling in the room itself. The argument lived up to the hype in terms of the contentious nature of the issues and the questions that were coming. The Chief Justice had to extend the time that was normally allotted because there were so many questions. And it was a fascinating argument to be there. But I think Christian Wagner, who represented Jack Phillips, did a great job of articulating this is not about who comes in the door. It's about not promoting certain messages you disagree with. Some justices were buying that theme. Some were not. But overall, I think it was a favorable day for Jack Phillips, given just what went on and the questions that were asked.
Now, John, this is a very significant case. Now, it's not unprecedented for the court to extend the time and allow more time for oral arguments, but it doesn't happen every day. And so I think that itself speaks to the significance of this case. How important is this when it comes to the issue of the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion, in your view?
I think it's hugely important, and some of the questions that were asked illustrated that. One question that the Chief Justice asked a lawyer for the state of Colorado was, well, can the state compel a Catholic legal service, a pro bono Catholic legal service, if they offer their services to everyone but couldn't make arguments promoting same-sex marriage? And the Colorado lawyer said, yes, that could be compelled under the law. So you have those type of issues that seem to strike right at the heart of compelling someone, in this case a religious person in the example, to really speak against the core of their beliefs, but it really doesn't have to be that. It could be someone of a non-faith, of a different faith. It cuts across all these ideological boundaries. When the government can tell you what you must say on core issues like marriage, that's a scary thing. And justices were really concerned, I think, with some of the answers the state was putting forth.
Well, John, it would seem that once you pierce that veil of, as you say, compelling citizens to do something that is counter to their beliefs, in this case, we're talking about a cake baker, and the issue is his artistic ability, which is an expression of his speech, which is tied to his views and his values. And if you can compel him to do that, it would seem that you have entered really a slippery slope, and there's really no end to what the government could then force you to do.
I think that's exactly right. In fact, one question that came from Justice Ginsburg, in fact, Justice Ginsburg asked the state, well, could you compel a cake artist to write, God bless this marriage, on a cake? And the Colorado attorney said, yes, you could compel that. Flat out text. That would apply to a printer, a calligrapher. Another question that came was, could a calligrapher be forced to write wedding vows for a same-sex couple endorsing same-sex marriage? And the attorney said yes. And those are scary things, right?
Sounds like to me, John, that sounds like indentured servitude. Like you have no choice in the matter. Yes, they're compensating you. They're giving you something, but you have no say as to what you do with your talent, your ability, and your skills.
And even worse, not just that type of servitude based off of something that's irrelevant, but something that cuts against the core of who you are. To proclaim messages that violate the core of your faith. It was very concerning. Another interesting thing that really stuck out at the argument was the questions that Justice Kennedy asked. As your audience well knows, Justice Kennedy is often a swing vote in these types of cases, and he raised very interesting questions about how the state was singling out and really discriminating against Jack Phillips. At one point, Justice Kennedy said, tolerance is essential in a free society, and it seems that the state has not been tolerant or respectful of Mr. Phillips' religious beliefs. That was an enormous statement that really almost sucked the air out of the room in the courtroom to say, wow, Justice Kennedy views this case potentially, I mean, we just never know what they're going to rule, but potentially Justice Kennedy views this case as not about discrimination, but about people of faith living out their beliefs. In earnest attempts to, you know, tolerate all people, but just not being able to express messages they disagree with.
I mean, when you look at this, John, you know, we've had some of these issues in the last year where we had designers who refused to make a dress for Melania Trump because they disagreed with the president's politics. We've seen, you can take another example, we've seen drug manufacturers refusing to sell the drugs required for lethal injection to states to carry out capital punishment cases because they have a moral objection to capital punishment. So it appears that the only place that certain governments want to impose this, you know, this compelling interest of the state seems to be on the issue of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, and not just that on that issue, but on one viewpoint on that issue, which is very
right.
Concerning. So you have another issue that was raised that kind of comes along those lines was in this case, there were three other bakeries that received a request to make a cake criticizing same-sex marriage. And the state of Colorado came in and said, well, those bakeries, they can decline to create those custom cakes. They can decline to express those messages. But then it turns around and tells Jack Phillips, hey, Jack, you have to create a cake endorsing same-sex marriage. Now, the discrepancy there is just enormous, and it's something the justices picked up on and said, that doesn't seem fair at all. The state isn't being neutral and fair here. It's playing, you know, playing favorites. So, which is unfortunate in our society where we can not disagree about viewpoints. We have to view everything as an attempt at discrimination. And that's just not the case. And I think that's something the justices were struggling over, that they were acknowledging that, look, we live in a diverse society. But we have to be able to have discussions without, you know, assuming the worst in other people. And that's exactly what happened with Jack Phillips. He would serve all different people. He welcomed them all in their store, including people from the LGBT community. He just couldn't promote certain messages.
Well, let me ask you about that, John, because you're talking about the inconsistency of the Civil Rights Commission there and how they've applied the law. But Jack Phillips, consistent in that this was not the only message that he refused to promote or create a cake for. He was consistent with his views. He would not communicate other messages that were incompatible with those religious views that he holds.
That's exactly right. And then I think that highlights it's not about the person who walks in the door. It's about what message he's asked to create. So he wouldn't create messages promoting Halloween, for example, because that's just inconsistent with his conscience. Messages, you know, supporting racism or intolerance of other people. I mean, he just wouldn't do
that. Or sexually explicit messages.
Vulgar messages. Exactly. He had a uniform rule on those things because he couldn't say those messages. And that's, you know, just like those other cake artists couldn't, you know, make a cake criticizing same-sex marriage. And that's within their prerogative. But Jack should have the same right. As a speaker, he should be the one choosing what he says and does not say. It should not be the government coming in and saying, no, we're making that choice for you.
John Scruggs, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, representing Jack Phillips. Kristen Wagner, who's been on the program before, she was his main attorney there this morning arguing on his behalf. John, let me ask you, any surprises this morning?
I wouldn't say there are two enormous surprises. I would say that one question, like I noted earlier from Justice Ginsburg, that I think all the justices, were, there was a consensus that they felt very uncomfortable in any situation where the government was compelling text. So that was an interesting point that, you know, I drew a lot of encouragement from.
Okay. John Scruggs, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you want to find out more about Jack Phillips or the Alliance Defending Freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at President Trump's bold and decisive move in the Middle East.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday of this week, President Trump announced that he was going to move forward with something that a number of his predecessors had been putting off. Not only did the president recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, but he asked the State Department to formulate a plan for moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. Joining Tony to discuss this courageous decision was Eric Stakelbeck, host of the show Watchmen on TBN and a former Middle East reporter for CBN. Here now is Tony Perkins as he gets the conversation started.
Eric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
I know you know this area quite well. You spent a lot of time over there. Significant decision today?
Very significant. I would argue, Tony, a history-altering decision today. This date, December 6, 2017, will go down with May 14, 1948, the declaration of the modern state of Israel, as just a monumental event. Look, in terms, Tony, of stability, we hear the pundits gnashing their teeth and saying, this is going to cause instability in the Middle East. Excuse me, where have they been the past 7 years? Instability is the name of the game in the Middle East, whether it's Iran marching for nukes, arming Hezbollah, Hamas rearming, Iraq, Syria, Yemen ceasing to be nation states. So I'm not worried about stability. I think this is long overdue. Number one, it's keeping with U.S. law. The 1995 Jerusalem Embassy Act declared that, yes, the U.S. is going to move its embassy to Jerusalem. It's long overdue. Look, Tony, we have our capitals in Berlin, Paris, London, Beijing, Moscow. Why don't we have our embassy in the eternal capital of Israel, Jerusalem? So today rectifies that situation, and it's long overdue.
Isn't this one of those rare examples of the use of strength without having to use the military?
Absolutely. I think diplomatic strength, Tony, I think that's a great point. You know, look, President Trump made this promise during the campaign. This was something that was clearly on his heart for a long time, and he followed through. It shows that, look, the entire world, whether it's the EU, China, Iran, obviously, Russia, the Arab and Muslim world, they're vehemently against this move, the UN, yet against the grain. He went against the grain, did President Trump, and he made this move regardless. It was a bold move, and he's bucking the rest of the world by doing it. But I think history will show that he did the right thing without a doubt, and his stature will grow because of this move.
So, Eric, how do you think the Muslim nations in that region are going to respond to this?
Interesting, Tony. Number one, you'll see the likes of Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran. They'll be openly hostile about it, obviously. Then you'll have the Sunni Arab states, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan in particular. Now, they will issue public statements condemning the move. But, Tony, behind the scenes, these nations are working very closely with Israel. There's back channels going on, intelligence sharing, for one reason, Iran.
Right.
That Iran, Hezbollah, Assad regime axis, aided and abetted by Russia and Vladimir Putin. That is the main concern of the Saudis, Egypt, Jordan. They see that growing Iranian superpower as an existential threat to their regimes. So they might not be happy about the embassy moving to Jerusalem, but at the end of the day, they are far more concerned about that Iran-Hezbollah threat that is at their doorstep.
I think that's absolutely correct. I can't speak for Saudi Arabia, but just recently met with the Egyptian president, Sisi, and the Jordanian prince, Abdullah. And in the conversation, this did come up in the conversation, and there was clearly this is not what they would embrace. But the public statements I have seen in the last 24 hours from them, much stronger than what we heard privately. And also, you're absolutely correct, they have, especially Jordan, the Jordanian intelligence folks work very, very closely with the Israelis because it's to the mutual benefit that they have security at their borders and they keep these radicals in check.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, not only the Iran threat, the Hezbollah threat, Tony, but the ISIS threat within these countries. Look, over Thanksgiving weekend, we saw a mosque bombed by ISIS in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, over 300 people killed. So there's the Iran threat, there's the ISIS threat within. At the end of the day, they line up, do these nations, Jordan, Egypt, the Saudis, they line up much more closely with Israel and the United States right now than they do, obviously, with Iran or the Assad regime. And they're aware of that. They're aware of Iran's designs. At the end of the day, the Iranians, look, this Iranian regime would love to get their hands on Mecca and Medina, the holiest sites in Islam, which are controlled by Saudi Arabia, obviously. Iran has huge regional ambitions. They're feeling very good about themselves right now. They feel like they have the wind at their backs. They have a powerful patron in Russia, which is now has a beachhead in Syria. So Iran feels good about itself. The Saudis are very, very concerned, to say the least. So Israel is looking pretty darn good if you're the Saudis, Egyptians, or Jordanians right now.
So, Eric, what type of security threats can we see? I mean, are we going to see just kind of moderate, possibly, attacks? Or, I mean, is it just going to be a lot of saber-rattling, or could something else come from this?
I think you'll see a lot of saber-rattling, Tony, absolutely. I think when it comes to the Palestinians in the West Bank and Hamas, you might see more than saber-rattling. You might certainly see an uptick. They're calling for 3 days of rage. Now, many times over the past few years, Palestinians have called for days of rage. We've seen this in 2015, for instance. They did the same thing. We had a wave of stabbing attacks in Israel carried out by Palestinians.
Right.
I hate to say, God forbid, you could see some activity like that, but I believe the Israelis are prepared for that. I know the U.S. is prepared for it. We prepared our consulates and embassies around the world for any kind of radical or jihadist or terror activity. So I think we are prepared. You're going to see a lot of bluster. You might see definitely some attacks carried out by Palestinians. But I think overall, you're not going to see a major, major kind of attack or terror.
All right. Eric Steckelbeck, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you, my friend.
Thank you, Tony. Anytime.
You can find out more about Eric Steckelbeck and the president's decision on Israel when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available. And right now, a generous friend of FRC is going to match your donation to this radio ministry during the month of December. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with House Majority Whip Steve Scalise right after this break.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
What is the purpose of the military? To fight and win wars. The Obama administration abandoned this basic, common sense principle and instead reversed long-standing policies that did not allow those who identify as transgender to serve. However, the Trump administration intervened to stop this radical social experimentation and announced that it will restore the former common sense rule. A key voice in raising this issue in Congress is Representative Vicky Hartzler. Her proposed amendment to stop taxpayer money from being used to pay for gender reassignment surgery or hormone treatments for service members was narrowly defeated, but it helped focus attention on this issue. Although there is a current reprieve, the fight is still ongoing. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch Congresswoman Hartzler share congressional insight on this issue and give an update on where the fight for our military currently stands. Once again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There is a race going on to avoid a government shutdown, and on Thursday, President Trump met with congressional leaders to discuss the spending bill. At the same time, the House and Senate continue to finalize the tax bill. Joining Tony to talk about those bills, as well as the buzz about Israel, is House Majority Whip Steve Scalise.
Steve, welcome back.
Tony, always great to be with you.
I knew you were going to be late because I was watching you on C-SPAN. So I was. It's always good when I can keep an eye on my friends. So as long as I know where you're at, I'm in good shape. All right. It's when you disappear that I get worried. Okay?
That's it. And you really need to get worried if you ever see Nancy Pelosi holding that gavel again. And we're not going to let that happen.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Yeah, well, and key part of that, let's talk about this. We were just talking about this funding bill. You got a 2-week extension to December 22nd. All right, how's this going to play out?
Well, you know, we first of all are working on getting this tax cut bill passed. And as you know, historic tax cuts, these are Reagan-esque kind of tax cuts that President Trump has championed when he was running for office and now as president and working closely with us so that hopefully by the 20th, we can have a bill on President Trump's desk that cuts taxes for people across the board. Not only does it cut taxes for middle class, hardworking families, it also cuts the corporate rate so that we can be competitive again as a country and stop shipping these good jobs overseas and bring those middle class jobs back. So that's our main focus. But obviously, as we get to the 22nd, we've passed bills over to the Senate that show conservative priorities of how to fund the government, pay our troops, do all of those things, and the Senate has never taken those bills up for months. And that's
now, let me stop right there, because we were talking about this earlier with Terry Jeffries. I want to explain this to our listeners. You said you send over bills. You sent over appropriations bills, which is the way we're supposed to fund government, correct?
That's the constitutional responsibility that the House and Senate have. The House actually did that work months ago, sent those bills over to the Senate. Again, strong conservative priorities. But the Senate has yet to take any of those bills up. Every Democrat votes to block any of those that come up. And, you know, it's been a problem that creates all these deadlines and crises where you get to the deadline and nothing's happened because the Senate's sitting on all these bills.
So we come now to, we got the tax reform going. That looks like it's going forward. Obviously, watching it, there's some priorities. We want to make sure it's in there. Obviously, the child tax credit. We want to make sure that the Johnson Amendment language that the House put in, but the Senate did not, make sure that that's in that. That essentially is the removing the muzzle from churches, pastors, nonprofits when it comes to political issues.
Yeah, truly equity for religious freedom. And I know you've been a leader and champion of that. And I appreciate all you've done to help me, Jody Heiss, Mike Johnson, and others get that language in the House bill. We got a really strong language in the House bill that passed, which was historic. You've never seen a repeal of the Johnson Amendment pass the House, and we were able to get that done. Mark Meadows helped with that effort, too. Unfortunately, the Senate did not follow suit, so in the conference committee, we are trying to get the House language in, but unfortunately, the Senate didn't do it, so we're gonna continue battling that out, as well as a lot of other important issues for how to cut taxes in that tax cut bill.
So, folks, you're going to have to help out with that. I'm going to give you the switchboard number here in a little bit. You're going to have to help get your senators moving on that. So we get to the 22nd. We're going to have another funding mechanism because the Senate, as you said, Democrats blocking the appropriations bill. So we're how long are we going to continue to fund government by continuing resolution?
Well, I don't want us to continue doing that. But, you know, when we see these deadlines, one of the things that Speaker Reines said when we get to the week of the 22nd is that we're going to take about a month-long continuation of all forms of government except Department of Defense. And we're going to take the defense appropriations bill that we passed out of the House that properly funds our defense department for the entire year with a pay raise for the troops and a restoration of some of the degrading you've seen under Barack Obama. Barack Obama literally did drain our military, our readiness, equipment, and planes that are falling apart on the tarmac. We and Donald Trump has wanted to restore our Defense Department to the strength and leader of the world, as we should. So we're going to put that bill for a year on top of a short-term bill and send it over to the Senate the week of the 22nd and make them do their job.
Well, we won't have long to wait. We got 2 weeks, and we'll see what they do because I'm sure, like the rest of us, they want to get home for Christmas too.
Yeah, and we all want to celebrate Christmas. I know even that became controversial over time, and I'm glad that you promote Christmas so much. It's a celebration of the birth of Jesus, and we all ought to remember what that season's about.
Absolutely, and I'm sure this will be a very special Christmas for you. Steve Scalise.
It will be a special Christmas for me. Merry Christmas to you, Tony.
Merry Christmas. I hope to see you probably next week.
If you want to find out more about Steve Scalise or those two bills moving in Congress, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.